from the Arsenal. It is me, Chris. I'm here. There's co-hosts. Their names are Addison, Lane, and Todd. We're fresh off of the Red Riot Games Flesh and Blood Constructed Tournament that we talked about in our last episode. So we got results. We got a lot to talk about with how we all did and some thoughts on the tournament structure and all that good stuff. So this might be a little bit of a long one, but we got a lot of good information for you. But before we kick things off, how's everybody doing?
I am here.
Yeah, I'm doing great. Can't...
Awesome. How about you, Lane?
Yeah, I'm also here. I don't know if I'm doing great, but here I am.
All right. Everybody's pretty sullen today.
Lane feels some kind of way. We'll get there.
Yeah, we'll get to that. we're just going to start going through people and get a little play-by-play recap of how everybody's day went. I'll just start since I'm talking already.
Let me ask you a question.
Yeah.
So, Chris, you played in the tournament, correct?
Yeah.
I'm going to take this right from you.
Yeah.
All right. So what were you playing?
I played Ranger.
Ranger.
Yeah.
What type of variation of Ranger did you play?
First of all, you gotta stop clicking that pen because I gotta edit that.
All right. Well,
put it down. Hands on the table.
All right. Yep. I'll give you that.
I was playing so it's this Ranger we've talked about a few times on the podcast. It started out fatigue centric, which sort of started to change once the draw rules have been in flux a little bit. We realized it was going to go to time a lot, so we made it wider, but it's still keeping the same defensive core. So I guess if you had to call it something, it'd be like wide fatigue or something.
Yeah, that seems accurate.
It's not super aggressive. It's just
Chris's Ranger deck. It's awesome.
Yeah, it's my Ranger. Yeah, yeah. I got a nice compliment.
It's yours.
From a couple people. Yeah. I ended up going 2-2 overall. I played Grendel. If you guys have played on TTS, you probably played him a lot. He's a brute player, really nice guy. He's played a ton of games. He's very efficient. He's very good. That game came down to 2-2. He got me with a reckless swing, which, you know, is something you got to remember when you're playing against brute, but I don't play brute enough to remember it. So I took that one right in the face. That game was very tight. I realized a couple plays after the game that I had lethal in my hand for two turns.
Yep.
And didn't pull it off right and ended up eating the reckless swings, and that's what you get. So that was a lesson learned. But Grendel was very complimentary. He liked the Ranger deck. So that was nice to hear. I had a round two bye. Round three, I have it right here. I believe his name is Tamron. He was playing a tall warrior. Just beat the
tar out of you.
Just completely annihilated me.
He beat you like you owed him money.
I think Todd and I both said that's the only time we've ever seen a warrior with four counters on Dawnblade.
Yeah.
That's the only time. I've never seen that.
Just could not handle what was coming.
I still don't see how you let that happen. That's insane.
I have no idea, man. I don't know that I could have done anything else.
Just pop all four cards in your hand.
Maybe. I don't know. I don't even remember holding anything back. I think I just had bad hands.
He had a couple hands where he had defense reactions and reinforced the lines.
Yeah, I did get clogged up with those.
He had a couple really weird draws.
That was going to be my question for Chris, is how did reinforce the line feel against a tall warrior?
Felt fine. The only problem was I was drawing all of those, but not drawing the things to block with. He did route me later in the game, but it wasn't that impactful. But I in order to break the Dawnblade chain at one point, I had to block with an arrow and three reinforced the lines. Because that's all I had.
Not only that, I had tough. Four counters on it.
Yeah. So the card felt good. And actually, that's another thing that came out of it. People were asking me a lot about that card because they thought it was working well in my deck. So they were asking me my experiences with it. And overall, it was very good. I mean, I think I sideboarded it in all three of the games I actually played.
I just think it's a much better card than people give it credit for. So that's why I was curious.
Yeah, I agree. I know a lot of people had talked about not wanting to run it against Warrior because of route, but you're going to get routed anyway. So yeah, the card was really good in the deck. I think every time I used it, it was super impactful, especially in the first game against the Brute. Took the heat off some big hits. And then I played Adam, who was a Ranger player, and he was kind of all over the place with it. He was going wide. He was going tall. felt like it was mostly tall. He was running increased tensions and take aims. And that also took the heat off of some big arrows that were coming my way. Dominated arrows. I was getting to play those out of the arsenal, which was really nice. And then, yeah, the last match was Ranger. Got through that. It was very close. That was another, I think we were both at 2-2. So I was able to take that. Fortunately, Adam was really generous because at that point I was playing sloppy as hell.
You were quite sloppy.
Like there. I was just straight up apologizing to him over and over. And I don't even know why I was playing that sloppy. I think, you know, I was chatting with him a little bit because you had told me that he was a nice guy, Addison. So I felt really casual with it. And then I was making a bunch of play mistakes. So it's probably just my mentality going into that match. But ended up getting the win, win 2-2. That was, I know I talked a lot of shit on the previous episode about how I was going to go to day two and lose and all that stuff. But actually it performed probably better than I thought it was going in, especially since I didn't run into all the warriors and dashes. I only ran into the one warrior, and the brute game probably should have been mine. Just from, you know, misplaying that Razor Reflex for two turns, really.
Well, and you look at that, and then you also realize too, like, we look at these mistakes and we look at these matchups and where we came out and who you played afterwards. Any one of those wins or losses that changes also changes your pairing going forward.
Right.
So it's all speculation as to where, based on where you were.
Yeah. Because
right?
If I win that game, I probably go play play a warrior or a dash in round two, which then messes up my round three and four pairing. So
yeah. Yeah.
I'm really happy with how it went. Obviously I like to make day two, but it played really well and I felt good playing on TTS, which I hadn't really spent any time on. So that was good.
Yeah.
Who'd like to go next?
Well, I mean, let's go with, I'll go next. Cause I've had like a very eventful tournament. I was on my brute. I was on my brute list and I did not have, enough reps on TTS, because I did not come up with a strategy or a very good way to actually handle the discard mechanic and the intimidate mechanics. And that came through in my results. I ended up 1-0-3. Mm-hmm. So I had three draws, which was not super good. But in all three of those games, I felt like I was in the driver's seat late game. I felt like I was in a position to win. I played against a warrior list first. And when we went to time on that, I think we were at 4-4. And I had a handful of beatings coming. And then my next game was against, Sam Yen. I'm not sure how to pronounce that last name.
I'm not sure either.
Yeah. I'm not, hell of a brute, Bravo player. And that game, when we went to time, I was at 23 and he was at 15. I think I was in a pretty good position there. And my last game was against a mech player from New Zealand. And he was at 4. I was at 1. But he had 2 cards left in deck. So I was in a real good spot there as well. But it is what it is. The big thing for me came down to time and round and a solid way to actually handle the intimidate mechanic. Cause that felt really slow every time I had to go through it.
Yeah. And you figured out some ways to speed that up for next time.
Yeah. And I mean, I think we'll get to some of that stuff when we start talking about ways to make these tournaments a little bit smoother and stuff like that. Like some adjustments that can be made, but, probably the biggest thing I would say straight off is reps on TTS, not so much reps with the deck. I felt like I knew the deck very well, but it was actually reps playing that list on TTS.
Mm-hmm.
So is what it is, but it was fun all in all. Everybody I played was super great. Like this community reminds me a lot of the Destiny community. Mm-hmm. Everybody was super friendly.
Yeah.
Like I didn't feel like there was any shenanigans, any issues, any ill will. Everybody played fun and this was a tournament for money.
Yeah. Yeah. People were very nice regarding, like I said, running into Adam and playing sloppy. He was super cool with it. I tried to be cool when things went haywire, especially because, you know, things are going to happen on TTS. We'll talk about more
as
we go through everybody. But,
yeah,
everybody was super nice. It was a good time.
Yeah. Addison, how'd you do, brother?
I went 2-2. Played mech. I got fortunate and played 2 Guardians my first 2 rounds, which was just easy peasy. That's a pretty bad matchup for them. My third round was an awesome game, though. I played against this dude named Jason from New Zealand. He played Warrior. It looked like a pretty similar build to Matt Rogers that he played in the tournament. It was like a energy potion, time snap potion kind of build where they're trying to go tall and take extra actions and kind of leverage Twinning Blade, which is probably an underutilized card in Warrior just because it's kind of awkward to use it sometimes. But I really do like that build they have. I think it's pretty good. Todd watched my game. It went down to the wire, and he got me at the very end. It was really good. It was 2-2 at the end, and I could have blocked for 9, but I really needed a tempo swing back in the other direction, so yeah. I gambled on the 6, and I lost. And that just happens sometimes in Warrior, and there's nothing you can do about it. Because I knew I had items left in my deck, and I knew at some point I was going to draw a hand that had 2 items in it, and that was going to be game anyway. So at some point, you just kind of got to take the chance. So I did, and I didn't get there. And then my last game I played was in the Mech Mirror, and that dude just drew, like, I mean, hats off. Like, I can't even say anything about it. We both started the game. I rolled double ones for my roll-off. He rolled, something better than that, probably a 3. I don't remember. But and his first turn was Plasma Purifier. My first turn was Chamber, so I felt pretty good there. Drew up Tome in hand. Put that in my arsenal after doing mech things, which feels really good because then really all you need to do is hit a high octane, and that's pretty much you're off to the races at that point. I never saw a high octane. My opponent ended up seeing two of them before I saw one, and that was it. GG's.
I got to watch. So we actually had Chris, Addison, and myself. My rounds were in the morning, and you two guys played this in the afternoon. Mm-hmm. And so we actually did it up at the shop, which was kind of cool because I got to sit between both of you guys and just kind of watch and be that little parrot on your shoulder after the game be like, hey, I saw this. Hey, I saw that. Mm-hmm. And just let you guys play but be able to, like, see the things that you might not have saw. And that felt really good just to be able to, like, give – that information back is like immediate feedback after a game. I feel like that's probably like the most crucial information you can get sometimes when you're playing in these things.
That was super useful.
I loved it. I loved having you there. Yeah.
It would have been really easy to like blurt out misplays and stuff. You didn't say a freaking word.
Yeah.
In case anybody's concerned about us playing in the back of the shop, no communication between players. It was really nice to have somebody there behind me who could say, oh, you missed this. You missed this after the game. Like stuff I'm going to have to remember in the future.
Yeah.
So that was really nice. And it was cool to come down here and play here and still like feel like I was in a shop environment, not so isolated.
Oh, yeah. Well, I was like super like, I don't want anybody. Like there was some background noise from the shop, right? Yeah. Like we had people in here. But like we had a couple of the guys stop by while we were playing, come up there and be like, oh, look at that. And I'm like, shut up.
Now it's time to go.
Like, don't talk. Like no input. These guys are playing.
Do I need to put a rope around this?
Yeah, thing? Like, do I need to cordon this off, get a couple bouncers? Like, that's how this is going to be. But no, it was super cool. And it was also good for me to get an idea of how you guys play those lists into other things, having perfect knowledge, right? Like, I have perfect knowledge of your hand, and I have the knowledge of what the players are playing into you guys. And then I could see where your decision points were being made. Mm-hmm. Like, that's some of the stuff that you don't normally get a third person to actually be able to do for you regularly.
Mm-hmm.
So that was super handy.
I enjoyed it.
Yeah, me too.
Yeah, I enjoyed having you there. I really did.
Yeah, and like if we do these again, like I'd love to do the same thing.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And because originally Mike also was supposed to be on this show, but Mike had internet issues and couldn't make it. And Mike also had internet issues and couldn't make it to the tournament.
That's a bummer.
So.
Yeah, that sounds like Mike has internet issues.
Yeah, Mike has serious internet issues. So
that's a bummer.
Poor Mike.
Poor Mike.
You know, we feel for Mike. We miss him.
For certainly.
And yeah. So we'll go on past Mike now. We'll get to Lane.
Yeah, I can talk a little bit about my results here. So I did finish 3-0-1. So no losses, 3 wins and a draw. My first match, I played a player who was definitely newer to both Flesh and Blood and Tabletop Simulator. So it was more of a teaching experience for me than an actual competitive game, which was kind of nice because it gave me some time to, you know, make sure that I knew what I was doing with my deck, that I understood like what my opponents were going to be trying to do. But it was cool. And I hope that player went on to have a good event after that. I'm not entirely sure how they finished though. The second round that I played, I played against Runeblade. And that match took forever. It would not have been that bad, I think, but we did have a judge call in the middle of it. I didn't actually want to call a judge, and it was about a card effect that I had. And the reason for that, I'll kind of break down it a little bit right now, but my opponent had a Runeblood Barrier on the field. Okay, so Runeblood Barrier allows you to use your Runechant tokens and get rid of them instead of taking damage if you were going to take damage. Now, I was playing Warrior, so I was playing Dorinthea, and of course, there are a lot of on-hit effects in this deck. Now, my assumption was that the on-hit effects would not trigger if you used Runeblood Barrier's replacement effect. That is, in fact, the actual ruling. But my opponent wanted to call a judge and just make sure that we were playing it correctly. So we did that. And we got the judge in there. It took a little bit of time. It was okay because I did ask for an extension afterwards, and they did grant us one. Unfortunately, I think it just wasn't actually long enough. So we got the judge in there, and the first judge told us that it one hit effects did in fact trigger, and it was like, okay, well, I don't think that's actually accurate. So we went and we got a second judge, and the second judge got in there, and they were like, no, they don't trigger. And it was like, okay, well, now we have two judges with two different rulings, so can you get a third judge, please, just to verify that one of you are correct? So they did, and It was okay. We got the right ruling. We made sure that both of us understood that one hit effects would not trigger if you did not take damage. So that was cool. Unfortunately, we then, you know, played out the rest of the game. And at the end, we did run out of time. Now, I want to clarify, I did miss lethal twice. Yes, on two turns, I missed lethal. So unfortunately, it was a problem where I just completely missed that I had a second Singing Steelblade in my deck that I could go fetch with the first one.
Oh, no.
Yeah, so that one would have allowed me to chain and get that one extra point that I needed. I did end up drawing that round at 13-1. So,
oh, my God.
A little unfortunate. Would have been a 4-0 event had I not tied that one, probably. My deck was very good. So round three, I played Brute. The Brute matchup wasn't one that I played a ton of. I did play against Todd's Brute list a couple of times, which was nice. So I had a pretty good idea about what they were probably going to bring to the table, at least. I don't remember much about the matchup, except that it was my opponent was tilted a little bit because they were at that point also. I think we were both. We had one win and one draw, I think, at that point. Yeah. So we were. He was a little tilted. It was what it was, but.
Yeah, I think your round three opponent was my round one opponent.
Yeah,
it was.
And I know he was upset about the draw stuff, which we'll talk about in a little bit.
Yeah. So I got the win pretty handily. And then in round four, I went on to play the mirror match. And this was where I really felt that my deck was just the right deck for the event. My opponent was definitely playing a list that was much more similar to the list that has been going around on Discord recently, which was a, it was a list very much like mine, where you could board in and out of like being either a go wide strategy or like a go tall strategy. But there were some weaknesses I thought that that list had that I changed with how I was playing mine. But I ended up winning that matchup pretty well. I was actually playing against Blake from Outcast Heaven. Todd is probably familiar with Blake. Outcast Heaven was really popular in the Destiny community. So they're,
I know those guys.
Yeah, Outcast Haven. Great guys. Outcast Haven. Outcast Haven.
Yeah.
Oh, is it Haven? Okay.
Yeah, it's Haven.
I watch their YouTube videos, but not that often. So I finished the event at 3-0-1, and I do think that I could have played the one matchup better and actually won that match to, you know, make it an easy 4-0 there. But at the end of the day, it kind of is what it is, and 3-0-1 I felt is a pretty good result. The deck that I played, I ended up playing more Steelblade Chaunt than I think a lot of the other Warrior lists played at this event, because I actually thought that it was pretty good into the Brute matchup, which I think other people were not really playing it into that matchup as much. So I was also playing more Dauntless than other people. I was playing a 6 Dauntless, 2 blues, a yellow, and 3 reds.
Hmm. Okay. Yeah.
Yeah. Those performed very well. I wanted Dauntless in my deck because when I was playing against Mech, their unmovables can just really destroy like all of your big turns. So having the Dauntlesses there allows you to get a card advantage in those matchups.
Yeah. Did you play any routes in your list?
I did. I played 2 routes in my deck, and I think I boarded them out in the Warrior Mirror, I believe. But I also played 3 Ravenous Rivals in my list. I'm not sure. I think I would continue to play Ravenous Rival going forward, but I'm not sure if I would continue to play Snatch or Life for Life. I think both of those were pretty medium to bad most of the time.
Yeah. That brings me to a good question for each of you guys. Was there anything that you had in your deck that you thought was like, oh, this is some secret sauce that I've got that I feel like is really good into this, and just kind of didn't feel that good? Or was there anything that you felt really fell flat?
I don't think so. I think it's pretty well dialed in. I mean, the card that maybe had the most questions, at least from the majority of the field, was a Reinforced Line, and I think this solidified my opinion of that card.
Yeah.
And that it's going to continue to be a staple in my deck, at least in the sideboard. But none of the cards that I stuck in the main deck felt bad to me. I mean, my live version of that deck has Phlox instead of the E-Strikes. I only have 1 E-Strike.
Yeah.
And I got to play with the 3 E-Strikes in this event. And now I need to go find those cards because those are critical to how good that deck can perform.
Yeah, well, that was part of the conversation we had when we built it, right? Was like, if we have the full card suite, we want these to be E-Strikes instead.
Yeah. So those were just something we were trying. But I think my deck is very well tuned, and there was nothing that I drew any time that I ever felt like was an impairment.
Yeah. Addison, what about you, man?
No, man, I don't think that my deck was standard mech, and I think that deck is pretty solid at this point. And I don't think there was anything that underperformed or overperformed. I think it did exactly what it was supposed to do in the situations it was supposed to do it. That said, I probably won't play mech ever again after this, because it was I'm not kidding, like, I'm not trying to like talk bad about mech, but after playing it in an event like this, I'm so bored of it. Like, I just don't ever want to play it again. Like, yeah. I would rather just play Brute and go and do my best and maybe lose than be bored while playing
and have to think about something while you're playing.
Yeah, like, no, seriously, like, I mean, I don't want to go off on a tangent here, but like, part of the reason I like this game is because the decision points are pretty pretty big as far as, you know, what you're going to do in each turn with blocking and taking damage and, like, you know, the things you have to do. And mech really strips those decisions down and makes it so you're just doing the same thing every game. You know, the only decisions you really make are whether you sideboard correctly or not. And really, all you have to do is watch a video that Matt Rogers made in order to actually do that right. So at this point, it's just like, I'm kind of bored of it. No one ever want to play it again.
Yeah.
Go ahead. Yeah. So there was actually a lot of changes that I would have made to my deck. One card that I never played actually in all four rounds was Remembrance. I thought that card is actually just not good in the metagame right now.
Whenever you have a chance, I want to talk about Remembrance.
Yeah, I did not play against Guardian, if that was your question.
Okay, that was my question. Yeah.
Yes. Guardian, I think, was a bad matchup, but I think that if I play against Guardian, I still don't want Remembrance. I just want to play a wider game plan against Guardian. So
that makes sense. Yeah.
Yeah. It's a single card in my list, but I do think that the slot that's taking up is either another Dauntless or the third Singing Steelblade. I think that's what I would play instead.
It's an interesting conversation because, like, we see some of the lists and it seems to be a staple. It's definitely a card that I wanted to put into my Brute, but I came to the same conclusion as you, Lane. It felt like a card that I was forcing in there because it felt like it needed to be a staple, and I didn't necessarily agree with it. So I actually ran mine without any remembrances. Well, which seems to be even Dan McKay had one in his as well. And it just feels like it's a forced card in some situations. And it doesn't feel like, while there's a huge benefit to it in the late game, it just doesn't feel like when you have that card early to mid and in the turns that matter, like it just doesn't feel like that card is doing enough to make you move forward.
I think it looks better on paper.
It does. Basically. Definitely.
And I don't know about you guys, but I don't ever think I got to a point in my deck where I felt like putting cards back in it was going to be impactful enough to bring them over other stuff that was more immediately impactful.
Right. Like I want something that's going to be game changing in my hand when I draw it, not in two turns.
Maybe if you get down that low in the deck.
I think that there's a lot to break down here. And I think the main issue with Remembrance right now is that the metagame is not in a place where you're really getting down to having a few cards in your deck. Usually you're going to have about 20 plus cards in your deck by the time the game ends, you are playing like a Guardian Mirror match or something of that nature. Right now, it's just not there. You have to be very aggressive. If I played this again, I would have a much more aggressive Terentia build than what I played this week. And I think even the build like Matt Rogers and all the New Zealand Warrior players played was probably not even that best Warrior build. I think Warrior's not a salt deck yet.
I'd agree with that. I think that's a good call. Which brings me to the next point. Like, Warrior and Mech didn't win it. Hats off to my boy Dan McKay piloting Claw Brute to take home the win.
Interesting. I'm glad to see it.
Yeah, that's good. I mean, Addison, you've had a lot of reps with Brute. Like, you were on Brute actually before I picked up Brute. What's your take on it?
I'm pumped, dude. I can't believe it. Yeah, I told you guys last week I want to be playing Brute. I just didn't think that it was the correct choice, and obviously I was wrong. somebody figured it out. But.
Well, yeah, and I felt like and I've been. So I picked up your banner that you dropped on the ground when you switched to mech and was like, you know what? I think Brute's where it's at. I'm switching to Brute.
Yeah, give it back. I'm taking it back.
No way, man. Like, I'm gonna keep carrying it. But like, no, I thought Brute was the right call. And as it came out in this event, it was the right call. Now, granted, Dan's list is probably about six or seven cards different from what I was on. Obviously, the claws being the biggest portion of that. Because those are on the board immediately from the start of the game, impacting the game state immediately. Can't state how much the clause changed that. And I really liked his idea of actually having the clause for most matchups and switching into club for Ninja.
Yeah.
Which makes sense.
Perfect sense. Like when you said, when he said that, I was like, oh my God, that makes absolute sense. And with Blood Rush Bellow being like the top card in a brute list, those claws are so good.
Oh yeah. Oh yeah.
Yeah. I started getting excited about brute when you pulled it out this week I watched you play it. And so that was already kind of tickling something in my head, and then to see it go and win was pretty impressive. So hats off to you too for kind of being aware that matchup was going to be so good. Well, you might be able to make a run with that.
Yeah, I actually think Dan got pretty lucky throughout his run here, and I disagree that Brute was the best deck for this event.
I don't know, man. Like, he had four matches into Matt in that Warrior list, and he went 3-1. Yep. Like, it's hard to argue that he got lucky.
I believe he played Matt three times, and he went 2-1. But
played him four times. Played him four times. Played him twice.
Played him four times. He played him four times and went 3-1.
Yeah, once in the Swiss. Once he lost to him in the top cut, and he played him twice in the finals. So four total.
Yep.
If you count the finals twice, yeah, that's fair.
But yeah, they did play two games.
Yeah, they did play two games. I still don't think that it was necessarily like that good. You know, when he hit his dice rolls, like, he was hitting really great numbers, right? But like, you hit a one a couple of times there, and the game goes an entirely different way.
Well, and he talked about that too in the post game. Where, like, what you're trying to do with the scab skins is play them in a position where you either roll them when it gives you a massive benefit, or it's not going to hurt you that bad if you miss. And that's kind of paramount in that list, because, like, you've got to have cojones to play Brute. Like,
oh yeah,
like you are putting it out there, and like that's a commitment that, like, I had to decide that I was going to make and be like, you know what? Full chaos mode, baby. Let's roll with it and see what happens. And he's really developed a strategy on using that more effectively than I have at this point. But I learned some shit from him watching it.
For sure.
What Daniel, I think, really focused on in every game that I saw was trading very aggressively and just being willing to take turns off on trading. Addison, did you have something to add to that?
Well, yeah, I was going to say, yeah, I mean, that's correct. Yeah, I mean, I think that's the whole thing with Brute is that you got to know when it's time to go and when it's time to not go. I mean, and that's what makes the deck hard to play is that you got to know when it's time to take damage and try to get these turns off and when it's time to kind of, block out and do your thing. But what I was going to say actually was kind of circling back is that him playing claws into Warrior is something that I never would have thought to do because I don't have the balls to do it. But it actually makes that matchup, which actually is traditionally really kind of tough, it makes it a little bit easier, which is crazy to me to think about. And hats off to that guy for figuring it out, because I never even considered claws in that matchup. It was kind of just like, go defensive, play till the end, try to get a reckless swing win, and sometimes it happens and sometimes it doesn't. And that's kind of what I told you, Todd, when you picked it up. I was like, just lean on reckless swing in the Warrior matchup. And that was incorrect. And I for one, am happy that somebody else figured something else out. That's pretty awesome.
Yeah. And so to his strategy, like I look at the way my Warrior match went, and I played my Warrior match similar to him, but I had a club, right? Where you had to be willing to take turns off. Because I learned that from playing my game with Lane. If the scab skins go off, like, you feel like you're super far ahead. If they don't go off, well, what do you do on those turns? And that was kind of a learning point for me with my games with you, Lane, is how do I handle these turns where I miss? And that's what happened in my Warrior game in this. Like, there were a couple turns where I just missed with the scab skins, and I had to be able to play smart through them. And it worked. I mean, I it went to a draw, of course, because like I said, like TTS, whatever. We'll get there. But like I was able to manage those games much better after those rounds with you, Lane. Because that's how you got me, is I would miss that turn, and then I have a horrible habit, and everybody here knows this, that I get tilted pretty easy on certain things with dice. And I kind of got tilted in that match with you. And when I reined it in and looked at it and what I needed to do, I was able to find plays out of it. And like, dude, hats off to him. Like, that dude played four rounds plus top eight into a final, which was a double elim. Like, that's a lot of fucking games.
Yeah, he definitely played the most games out of anyone.
Yeah, like that's just balls out a lot of games to be like, you know what? I'm going to risk it on a die.
Well, so we covered how everybody did. We saw who won. What I want to introduce to you guys, and I've ranted about this at length, so I'm not going to get into it too much myself, but we did see that this tournament didn't clearly communicate how they were going to be doing the draw rules until round two, basically.
Yeah.
So they decided to go with the end of current player's turn at the end of time, which was the rule introduced in the calling. How did that affect you guys, Todd? I know that you had three draws, so it's pretty important. But match aside, is that more of a TTS problem? Is it a problem with the rule? Is it just something with this tournament? Like, what was the impact of that for you?
Well, so I'm going to address the rule first, because the rule wasn't clearly stated in the original format. So my round one draw, we actually went to time and played three rounds and still drew.
Right.
And then and we were told we were fine there. Mm-hmm. And then my round two, we go to time and one of the judges comes in and I said, all right, so we have three turns. And they were like, no, you just do one.
Right.
And I was like, or you just do end this turn. And I was like, last time we did, you know, the three, they were like, nope, we just do one. So, I mean, that's fine. Like, whatever. It is what it is.
Mm-hmm.
But I do think those things need to be clearly addressed at the beginning of the tournament and established and made sure that that's not an issue going forward.
Mm-hmm. Do you think that rule is something you can learn to live with, or do you think it needs to be adjusted?
That's an entirely separate conversation.
Sure. I don't know that we need a whole segment or episode on that, but
yeah, like that's an entirely separate conversation.
It bit you this time. Do you think that you can make it so it won't bite you next time?
So that's a TTS question more than a go to time question. So like
you're being very evasive, sir.
Well, you have a couple things working here, right? Like Brute has some of the probably more mechanics that interact with your opponents on your turn than any other class there is.
Mm-hmm.
Because Brute has intimidate actions. They have discard from their own hand actions. They have a lot of actions that require you to take time in between just pitch attack, right? Or pitch boost, do this, whatever. Like when you're only doing stuff on your side, it's a lot easier to manage TTS. When you have to do stuff that interacts with your opponent on top of your attacks and your pitches, that takes more time. So Brute feels like there's an inherent weakness on TTS unless you have reps.
Mm-hmm.
And unless you know the mechanics. I did not have reps. So like I was doing, I'm going to roll a D4. If you have four cards in your hand, I'm going to pick this one. Please remove that one from your hand. Like, so there was a lot of that kind of stuff going on in my games, which led to time.
Yeah. Addison, you also came up with a draw. Do you feel like that rule was a factor? Was it a TTS issue or?
I did not come with a draw. That was Lane. Lane came with a draw.
Oh, I'm sorry. I kept thinking you have a draw. Lane. No draw. So we know you had a judge call on that one. That's a little bit different. But does that rule stick with you, or is that something you can normally live with if you're not dealing with some of those difficulties?
So with regards to the draw rule, I think that as long as the draw rule is clearly communicated and players have time to prepare and ensure that the list that they're playing is correct for the rulings that they're going into, it's not a problem. I do think that if you built your deck in a way that makes it so that you want to go longer and then you don't get one additional turn at the end of the round, that can be very difficult for some lists.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah, I
do you think that that ruins some deck archetypes?
I think that it made it much more difficult to play decks like Runeblade at this event, and I think that some of the slower decks, like the bigger Brute decks and the Guardian decks particularly, had a lot of trouble. One thing we haven't talked about yet is that we did have all three of us, Addison, myself, and Chris, were all actually in the same pod.
Mm-hmm.
So we didn't really get that many chances to see different decks out there. We got lucky enough that we didn't have to play each other, which was nice. But
yeah, because I would have blown you guys the fuck out. I'm just letting you know that. I was saving all my rage and inner. I told Addison I was going to flip that table and just stomp his laptop and say, oh, that's game loss. I'm sorry, bro.
I mean, y'all are lucky y'all didn't have to play me. Like,
there we go.
Yeah, I don't know what I would have done with two ties. That would have been... Oh,
man. I know.
Ooh, brutal.
You know what? We're undefeated.
Ooh. Yeah, so I think that it would have I'm not sure. Jacob Pearson played Guardian, right? And he made top eight with Guardian and performed the best in his pod. He got four wins in it. So obviously it was possible to play these decks under these constraints, but it's unclear exactly what impact that has yet. And I really think that if they had just communicated it clearly, it would not have been a major issue.
Yeah. How about TTS? Did that create any difficulties for you? Would you continue to play TTS tourneys? Todd's got his hand raised. He wants to answer this.
Oh, please, go ahead, Todd.
There needs to be a mod added to this fucking TTS feature for a random discard from hand. It exists. It's not even like you don't even have to make it. You just have to make it happen on this mod.
Mm-hmm.
We have it in Destiny. We just need to have this implemented into Flesh and Blood.
Which should be relatively easy to fix if you get a hold of the right people. I don't know who's working on the mod, but...
I don't know. If one of the 24 people that listen to this show are, like, a TTS mod maker, like, hit us up. Like, I feel like that as the guy that played Brute, right? Like, if there was a button I could click to go, random discard from opponent's hand, random discard from your hand, I would click that button every time and be done in like 5 seconds.
Yeah.
Or one.
Nice to have an opt button. So you didn't have to pull off the top and then look at the card and put it back.
Like, yeah, there's all kinds of little nuanced things that can be done. Now, that said, this TTS mod is awesome.
Yeah. I thought it felt very good. I didn't have any issues with it. I was able to pick it up and run with it with a little instruction from Todd and Addison and felt good with it. So I didn't have any problems. I could see what you were talking about with that, with the discard. And just a couple other little nitpicks, things they could implement better little quality of life changes. But for me, it felt good.
Yeah, the mod itself felt good. I will say the time in rounds feels a little constrained in general. And I think part of that's due to TTS. And part of it's due to the way the game is designed, right?
Mm-hmm.
So I would really like to see, personally, this is my opinion, I think 60-minute time limits on TTS matches is probably ideal. And if the rounds get done early and you get these little quality of life changes, that's sweet, right? Like, mm-hmm. The tournament goes faster. We don't have to take it all the way to time if it finishes before time because everything else works perfectly for everybody. Sweet. We get a round done in 40 minutes. Cool. We start 10, 15 minutes early.
Mm-hmm.
But I think time and round needs to be implemented a little bit longer on TTS just to help out some of these classes that are designed to be a little bit more tanky with big swings or something like that. Because when you leave it to time limit decisions, it definitely does benefit the more aggressive classes,
yeah,
than it does those classes that have a different design space.
And Lane, it sounded like you had something you wanted to add before Todd jumped in. Did you have any TTS issues?
I did not have any TTS issues, but I do think that it would be vital going forward to make sure that the tournament organizers tell people to practice TTS and get the rep in before the event.
Agreed.
I know there were multiple people in our pod who did not have that TTS experience, and that it was problematic because they were talking about it in our general chat for Discord for our pod. And I know that there were issues with some of the pods yesterday that also had this problem. So I think that that's the most vital takeaway for as a tournament organizer.
Yeah, like if I had everything to do over again, I would have done less reps in shop and like 30 more on TTS.
Yeah, I agree. Next time if there's a TTS tournament, we gotta play a little more online just yeah. to get used to the feeling.
Yeah.
Addison, I know you're a TTS grinder. You felt good on this. Did you have any issues?
Nope, no issues. Well, actually that's not true. A lot of my games had a lot of issues, but I can't really explain them. There was two games I had where we would both log in and it just wouldn't let us load our decks from FabDB. So one of the judges had to actually create the room for us and host it for us. It was super weird. It happened twice to me. I have no idea why.
We did have that issue as well. I had an issue where my Runeblade opponent in round two could not load their deck. That actually probably significantly contributed to the time issue that we had.
Yeah.
And that's frustrating because that's part of setup. You know, it sucks that.
Yeah,
dug into your round so much that it made an impact.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it was weird.
It did feel like every time they had an issue, regardless of how long it took, you were only awarded 5 minutes.
Well, I got 10 once. I got 10 once because it did take forever to actually get it figured out. It ended up being a non-issue, though.
Go ahead.
I was going to say, regarding the time issue, because I haven't really said anything about it yet, but I do have a couple thoughts about it. I think that they're going to have to figure it out. I actually think they're going to address it tomorrow. There's a policy update tomorrow. They just posted today. LSS did for March 1st. I think it's going to be exactly about what we're talking about right now. I think that at the calling, when they made this rule, I think this rule was specifically supposed to be for Blitz. I don't think this ever had anything to do with Classic Constructed. I think we all misconstrued it as this went for both formats, and I don't think that they treat both formats the same, and I don't ever think that they thought this rule was supposed to be for Classic Constructed, ever. That said, they still have been really ambiguous about what the rules are for time with Classic Constructed, and they need to figure it out, and I think that they will actually address this tomorrow. But as far as they're concerned, their design space is limited unbelievably with these rules. Like they can't create decks in the future. They can't create classes in the future that have anything to do with controlling the battlefield whatsoever, because that will not fly with the way that this is. Unless you're going to make all aggro decks from here until the game is over, you're going to have to figure this out and change it, because you can't make a class that heals or has anything to do with life gain. You can't make a class that has anything to do with creating NPCs in the battlefield. Like you can't do any of the things that could be cool about this game unless you address this issue, which I think is going to be addressed tomorrow, frankly.
I actually don't think that they can address this as an issue in a policy update. This has to be a game design decision that's made here. Unfortunately, 40 life just is way too much to get through in that amount of time. Like getting two extra turns at the end of the game isn't going to suddenly make it so that it is now reasonable to play a control deck with two extra turns. Like maybe you can play a mid-range deck then, but like the stuff that we're talking about, being able to actually play a real control deck in the game, I don't see that being possible with the way the game's currently designed.
I agree. They're going to have to completely change the end of the game rules for Classic Constructed. And it's probably something they should have already done, to be frank. I mean, they've already got. Go ahead.
So what do you guys think that rule should be changed to? Like, all right, let's say LSS calls us up tomorrow. They're like, hey man, we hear you guys at TAG are doing a whole lot of shit. What do you guys think our opinion of?
Reasonable.
What do you guys think? what do you guys think we should do with this end of term stuff? What's the answer that you guys have?
Well, for me, I would like to see real tiebreakers. And I would like to see the points for the various types of endings that could go on change. You know, it's two wins for, or two points for a win, one for a draw, zero for a loss, something. I don't think a draw should be tournament breaking.
I think a draw should be 1 point. I agree.
I agree. Awesome. I don't think draws should be tournament breaking. I don't think that if you take a draw round one, you should be able to say, all right, I'm done.
Yeah.
Because that feels real bad.
Yeah.
Well, it feels real bad to go three wins with a draw and still be out lane.
I know.
That sucks.
I'm not happy about it.
And you know what's even worse is like going undefeated all day.
Jesus. Here we go.
Man.
Well, that would have been what, 5 whole points for you? You could have placed fifth instead of eighth.
I could have placed fifth instead of eighth. But I mean, no. So that aside, I mean, so that's simple, right? So like, a draw equals 1 point. But what's your tiebreakers to determine where the draw happens?
It looks like it should be easy, but I don't think it should just be flat life. I think that's
agreed
too. But it's hard to say what could go in replacement, because cards in deck doesn't really make that much sense, because you have such a big range of number of cards in your deck that you could bring. I would have to think on that, because I don't have any ideas off the top of my head, really.
All right, well, let's think about it like this. Let's think about it like this real quick. I actually don't have any ideas off the top of my head, really, either. But let's think about it like this. What are the deciding factors in a game of Flesh and Blood when it all comes down and said and done? At the end of the day, life total, obviously. You get to zero, you lose, of course. But that can be misleading. I can win against an opponent that where I'm at 2 life, and the 2 life is actually more like 18 life because I took a bunch of damage to win the game, right? So life total becomes a little bit, you know, not actually the best way to do it. But what you can look at, I think, is you can probably try to find a way to look at, and I don't think cards and deck is the way to put it, but like who had the tempo at the end of the game? And that could be done by how many cards are left in the deck based on who was the person who was blocking over and over and over again. If you block with 3 cards for 5 turns in a row because you're trying to draw the game up to a draw, you're going to have significantly less cards in your deck than the person who was putting pressure on you to do so, right? So maybe there's a way to kind of figure that out, where if you were the person who just kind of went on the back foot and were kind of clinging on to, you know, blocking out for 12 or 9 every turn, then you kind of have lost that game. We understand in this game that tempo is really, really important. Once you lose tempo, you can only gain it back by leveraging your life total. If you don't have a life total to leverage, then you basically have lost that game. It's over.
So I'll counter argue that then. So what do you do about Boost Mech? Boost Mech is actually removing cards from their deck to actually deal damage.
That's true. I mean, you got a good point.
Yeah, so that's the point, right? Like,
yeah.
So with the different mechanics, just in the 8 classes that we have, the mechanics are so widespread that leveraging what's left in deck is almost impossible.
You're right.
And that's hard, because it feels like, based on a game where like the end of game is decided sometimes when you fatigue your opponent out by running them out of cards, right? That's actually a win strategy. Like, it's called a fatigue list. It's really hard to use that as a deciding factor for a tiebreaker. But at the same time, you can make the argument that also works, because you've made your opponent work that hard to get you to whatever your life total is at.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know what the answer is, and that's the hardest part about this game, because of the fact that it does use – the deck doesn't have a minimum card size. Well, it has a minimum card size. It doesn't have a maximum, though. It's up to 80 cards, right? So, like, that space to play in is massive, and that's what makes trying to use deck – as a deciding factor, or cards left in deck as a deciding factor, super hard.
I mean, it might be, though, because if you consider the fact that fatigue puts you in an inevitable loss position, if you choose to build a deck that is less cards in deck because you're thinning it to be more aggressive, it makes sense that you're going to approach that inevitable loss stage faster.
Yeah.
So maybe cards in deck really should be, because your life total isn't inevitably going to hit zero, but eventually if you continue to play, you're going to run out of cards.
Yeah.
So, I mean, that could be.
It's almost like sprinting to the finish, right?
Well, and that you could, let's put it in real fight terms, like a Conor McGregor versus a Nate Diaz. Conor McGregor is going to come out and swing on you and swing on you and swing on you until he's so tired that you get to come back.
Yeah.
So we put that into the boost mech versus fatigue guardian thing. The boost is going to be coming at you. Eventually they're going to run out of steam. They're going to be fatigued. Then they're in inevitable loss position.
Right.
I think you guys are out of your mind. I can't think of any competitive game where cards and deck is a viable way to measure who's winning.
I'm going to argue immediately against that because the Star Wars CCG that Decipher put out actually used deck differential in determining who won and lost. That was the first tiebreaker past win-loss record.
And Destiny cards and deck after life, didn't it?
Hmm?
Destiny had cards in deck after life?
Star Wars Destiny used cards in deck left after life, yeah.
So does Magic the Gathering.
Yep.
I don't think Magic the Gathering does that, Addison.
Absolutely, dude. If you're tied on life at the end of a game, it goes to cards in deck, 100%.
What are you talking about?
Look it up.
It definitely does not. You draw in Magic.
Not in Top Cut, you don't. You can't draw in a Top Cut.
You cannot draw in a Top Cut, correct. But Top Cut is not time limited. So it just plays out.
Addison made it up.
What are you talking about? I played a lot of competitive games. Like the games that exist right now, like this isn't a problem in them because the games are faster. They have an up tempo throughout the whole game.
So yeah, it sounds like, I don't know, we haven't had a chance to sit down and really fully think out the tiebreaker stuff. That's some stuff we're just going off on the cuff. I think Lane brings up good points where that might be a little bit crazy. and it's kind of like the best thing I can think about from here. They don't really have the systems in place to make really good tiebreakers, so it would have to be a compromise somewhere, which might even end up making it worse. But, you know, I think it's definitely something to think about because the draw rules are pretty tight right now. But to circle back, because we've been talking about the tournament, we've kind of got off track and talked about some larger meta issues. But for this tournament, I think we all had a pretty good time. I know we all showed up well. I'm really proud of everybody for how we all performed. Like Todd was saying,
I actually have a record.
Okay, you brought it up earlier, didn't you?
Yeah, I was super excited to share this with you guys because I don't know if you guys know. Everybody that played out of the shop came out with a winning record.
Mm-hmm.
Our combined total record for all four of us that played, because Mike didn't show up and was a bitch. The rest of us went 9-3-4.
And we also, Joey played too, who's not Joey, part of the podcast. Joey, does that count, Joey?
Yep, okay, I counted cool. Joey.
Because he went 3-1, right?
He went 3-1.
Yep. So we did awesome. I'm pretty stoked about it because I haven't played on TTS or large scale tournament for this game. So I feel pretty good about that. But as far as the tournament goes, I know there were some hiccups with the registration. I myself had an issue where my email address wasn't sent to the organizers. So I had to email somebody on day of to get a Discord invite to where they were doing all the setup and stuff. Did you guys run into any issues with anything? Is there anything that like feedback we can give or, you know, complaints?
I mean, for me, registration and everything was pretty flawless. Like, I know how to read. So everything for me worked pretty well, Chris.
Okay.
Jeez. Ouch.
So, all right. So it's just my fault. All right.
Yeah. I also had no problems with registration. It was pretty easy.
All right. Lane, do you want to pile in?
Yeah. For registration, I actually thought that they should have more clearly defined all of the rules on the registration page so that you actually knew what you were signing up for. Like, we all signed up because it was the only event available, right? But I think if it gets to a point where you have to actually start looking at different events and, you know, you're choosing one event over another one, I'm going to pick the one that has more clearly defined rules and that
tells
you, you know, hey, we're going to be using like this site to, you know, organize our event. This is exactly what we're going to do here. And then if, you know, we don't meet 200 players in our event, we're going to modify our event in like way X, Y, and Z. So.
Yeah, there was definitely some restructuring on the event, because I think originally it was scheduled to be 8-man pods.
Well, they originally had anticipated 128 players, I believe, and we ended up with, what, 87?
No, they ended up with 69.
Oh, wow. So I'm way off. All right. So 69. So the structure ended up going from 8 pods to 4 with 16 players in each pod.
It was roughly 17
okay.
in each pod.
Which is a pretty major shift. And I know I was initially really pissed off because I got paired with Lane and Addison, and I thought I was going to have to play both of them because we were all in the same pod.
Yeah.
So going to 16 was a welcome change for me. But if you're anticipating playing 8-man pods, you might strategize differently.
Well, it does change your strategy, right? Because you go from, all right, I've got to go undefeated in this pod. And then, like, you've got to go 3-0 is what you got to. Well, it really doesn't change anything, to be honest.
It actually changes a lot. So here's the thing.
So right? so it changes tiebreakers, but it doesn't change your strategy if you're looking to make day two. You still have to go 3-0.
So yes and no. So if I only have like a 17 person event, which is what this is, I'm not preparing for a diverse metagame. But if I have like 30 people in my pod, right? Or if I'm preparing for a pod for a thing with like 120 people, that's completely different. Like I'm gonna, for this event, I would have brought a significantly more aggressive deck, like just, you know, all aggro basically. Because I'm only playing full rounds. I have to win all of them. I'm only playing against, like, you know, 6 different people or whatever. So,
But to my point, like, the change from 16 to 8 is not big. But the change, as you stated, the change from, like, say, 16 to 32 or 16 to 64, like, that's a massive swing. But from 8 to 16 just doesn't feel like a major swing. Because the objective there is still you have to go 3-0 to get into the top of that pod. Because whoever wins the 3-0 match and that loser are pretty much your top seeds.
Mm-hmm.
Like, that's it. Like, that's how that cut's supposed to go. And Addison and you and Chris, your pod actually ended up where that wasn't the case. You guys were the one oddball out of the four.
Well, we also had two no-shows.
You had two no-shows as well, which also changed the
another
pod.
Two or three drops, I think. Mm-hmm. So that changed the dynamic up quite a bit, too.
Right. Yeah, so go ahead.
Sorry. I just want to clarify some things here. There were 12 total people across the four pods with 3 wins, and 4 of those players with 3 wins did make top 8. So,
right.
Yeah, it's definitely one of those, like, and some of those players definitely made it on breakers. It was unclear to me how many exactly because losses and draws weren't entirely recorded. But
would you have taken all X and ones?
I think you have to redo the structure to either make it so that it's a clean cut to your top, or just do a single, Swiss event. Like you're down to 64 players or whatever, 69 players.
Yeah, that was one of the things I was concerned with as we started to try to figure out who was going to make the cut or not. When Addison was coming up on his last round and you coming up on your last round, how that was going to shake out. It felt really weird and it was hard to predict.
I didn't think it was.
I thought it was.
Based on all the events that I've run here with the gem software, and I've actually compared it to other software systems to see how the breakdown works. I had a pretty strong inkling that whoever won Addison's last match was in.
So you, being a person with experience in the system, knew exactly what to expect. And me, a normal person like everybody else in the tournament, had no fucking idea what was going on, is what you're saying?
Yes.
So cool.
So your opinion doesn't matter.
I don't think it was possible for the winner of Addison's match to make cut because he finished 2-2.
Yeah, but I was – the person who won Addison's, that game did make top cut, though. The guy who beat me made top cut.
Exactly.
Addison's loss was in round 3.
Addison lost 2. Okay. So he lost round 3 and round 4. Got it.
Right. So
Todd beat you in round 3.
So here was the breakdown. You got the draw in turn two, mm-hmm. or round two. Mm-hmm. Addison didn't take his first loss till round three. He was still one of the three undefeateds going into round three. He lost that game, and the 3-0 got a pair down because of the fact that you had 15 people in your pod because you had two drops. So the winner of Addison's game in that pod was going to be the other person in, based on the fact that the 3-0 had a pair down.
So Jonathan was 3-0 going into that.
And he lost round one.
Yeah, he lost round one.
Okay, so someone who was 3-1 made top eight, but someone who was 3-0-1 did not make top eight.
Correct. I feel your pain.
Okay, I just want to clarify that I did not lose any matches. Someone who did lose a match made top eight.
I understand this, but the fact of where those come is what impacts the extended strength of schedule because of the fact that a tie is worth 0 points. Mm-hmm. So what ends up happening is you go past where the tie or the loss came, and you go to extended strength. And that's why Addison and his who he was playing was in a higher position there.
Right. I understand how that would work in a regular event. But in an event where you're taking a top cut there, I don't like it. Obviously, it affected me personally here.
Right. But agreed.
Yeah. I don't know.
I don't like it for either one of you guys, right? Like, I wanted one of us to make. I wanted all of us to make it. Fuck that. I didn't want one of us. I really wanted all of us to make it. But when I saw that final round, like I told Addison before the game, this is your game to get into the cut.
No pressure.
Like, yeah, no pressure, but like you win this, you're in. And because of the fact of where his loss came and where you being the other undefeated at that time, where your draw came, it was Addison's to grab if he won that game. And I hoped that you would get it in place of him based on the fact that the other guy had a loss prior. But tiebreakers being what they are, Addison had a better strength of schedule than I guess your opponent did because you got a pair down as well is effectively how that worked.
That's confusing.
No, my opponent did not have a loss either in that round. He was 2-0-1 as well going into round four.
So he had a draw round one, I bet.
I think so.
Yeah.
So all this is avoided by the fact that you just make it top 16 and you don't worry about
it. Yeah. Dude, like that, if it was – so look, if it was me running any of these events, it would be X and 1s make the cut.
Yeah, that seems to make the most sense. We've talked a lot about this internally at the shop
because
I know it's confusing for everybody except for Todd apparently who understands everything. it's still kind of a work in progress for me to make sense of it. I am just a little frustrated on Lane's behalf because
I am too.
He didn't lose.
I am too. I wanted to see our guys make it. Like I'm not gonna lie. I think like everybody we had that record speaks for itself. That's effectively like 3-3-1s right there. Like and then me with my draws. But I feel like we had three or four people that showed up really strong. Joey went 3-1 and ended up fourth.
Mm-hmm.
Like that's a rough break too, man.
It's tough, man.
But good reps for everybody.
Yeah.
A good learning experience for everybody. And we know what not to do next time going forward, right?
And I have one last thing I wanted to ask about the tournament structure and organization. Lane, I know you talked about this a little bit. How did you feel about the Discord organization? Did it feel like it could be improved?
I like
Discord. You like that? Okay.
I like Discord as a communication method, but I think that you should really be looking at something like Smash.gg or Limitless.tcg style tournament design. So they use challenge for the top eight, but for I don't think that they had anything before that because they had this like weird pod structure. So I think they ended up just using like gym software and breaking out into four different
tournaments
on it.
They did.
If you use the like smash.gg style software, you can actually build it out so that you don't have to deal with it all in Discord. Everything, tournament pairings, everything are just inside of that kind of software.
Yeah, I think overall it was good, though. I mean, there are obviously some complaints. I think they got a lot of feedback. So I know our Discord was going off about some stuff, but I'm excited for them to continue to put them on. I thought they did a good overall job. The prize support was crazy good. I'm looking forward to doing more stuff like that. Eventually, I would like to just play in shop, though. I mean, it doesn't really compete with playing person to person.
Agreed. I will add, I think that there was a little bit of overkill on the room name to password to copy paste into deck list. Like, that was 5 minutes of my life every game when the timer started. Yeah. That I'll never get back. and that definitely plays into time and round, right? Like, I've got to copy like a 6 to 8 digit room number to go to room one.
Mm-hmm.
And then a randomly generated password to go into that. And so it's like, open Discord, copy room. Open TTS, copy room. Go back to Discord, copy password. Go back to TTS, copy password. Open room.
Would you rather just have everybody do it individually in their pairing?
I feel like you could just go fab tourney room one, password one. Or just make the password the date of the day for all of the rooms.
Maybe.
Here's what should have happened. The room should have been pre-built by the admin, the tournament organizer, and you just join the room.
That's fine, too. If the password is just made so it's simplified, so it's easy for judges to get in and out of each room and hard for people to get in and out by just making it the date or whatever you want to make it, there's no reason to have like a randomly generated, like, Jesus Christ, those code, I don't even remember what they were, but they were like GGHIT.
Well, they were probably just randomly generated.
Like, yeah, I mean, it was ridiculous.
I mean, you want it to be secure too. You don't want random Yahoo.
Do you really care? Like,
it doesn't matter that much. No, I actually had to create every single room that I played in, and I felt that it was just an absolute waste of time because you have to communicate with your opponent, right? So you get in there. They're trying to fix their mic in the Discord group room, right? And then you're like, hey, have you built the room yet? Oh, I haven't. Okay, let me build the room. And then I ended up building them all.
I mean, that's just an online tournament struggle is what it sounds like to me.
But it can be made easier.
Yeah, you can have the room built and then both players just join the existing room.
Yeah.
It's that easy.
Well, I think we've covered a lot of stuff today. I feel good about the tournament. Okay.
I got another beer open. You got anything else to go on?
No, I was just going to say we all did a good job, but I don't care about you, Todd. Tired of it.
You know what? I did fine.
You technically were undefeated, so yeah, you just take that in your ninth place or whatever the fuck. And
I feel like my ninth place was higher than you with your 2-2.
That's not true. I got 8th.
Did you? Yeah, that's right. You had 2 drops.
It's all right. Next time you can catch me.
Yeah, that's right. I'll claw my way up there.
Yep. Anything else you guys want to add before we head out of here?
First, I do actually want to go ahead and thank Red Riot Games for putting on the event. It's really hard to run an event, especially when you're a pretty new tournament organizer. And I felt that these guys, they didn't really have that experience, right? So this was their first event. They really went out there. They got it all together. They got sponsorships to actually get prize support out there as well. And I think they did a great job there, and I want to recognize that.
Yeah, I agree, 100%.
Yeah, no lie. Like, it was worth the time to sit in there.
Absolutely.
And it was – I want to make sure I state this because we talked about this tonight at dinner. This community online that I've met so far is a super nice community.
Yeah.
Like, everybody I played was very courteous, very respectful, and, like, super eager to just learn and play and try and make, like, the game as easy and as manageable and as, like, comfortable as possible. Like, a really nice community of people to play with from what I've seen so far.
Yeah, everybody was super cool. I had people creating rooms for me, too, but I was playing a lot of TTS regulars, And I was like, I'm just going to screw this up. You mind making the room? And everybody's cool with it. So I'll take that L.
Yeah. I mean, it was good all the way around. Regardless of any complaints that we have about stupid, superficial stuff.
And I would say it's more constructive criticism.
Yeah. I would say that as well. Like, how do we make it better? Here's some things that we think would work.
Yeah.
And I just got to get better at TTS.
Yep. Yeah, me like, too. Yeah, we definitely got to play more. I got to find a way to get on streams with Addison more.
Yeah. So, Addison, hey, when's our next stream?
Thursday. I'm always down for Thursday. Everybody always blows me off.
Thursday.
Thursday. Okay, I'll see if I can make it work.
All right. But
what day works for you guys the best? I'm flexible.
No, I would say that no matter what day it was. So
I'm Tuesday, Wednesday.
See, the reason I did Thursdays is because Mike was like, oh, yeah, let's do Thursdays. And then the past two Thursdays, Mike has completely ghosted me, so.
Yeah, well, Mike has no internet, remember?
Well, he didn't say that prior to this, so I don't know.
Yeah. So we'll have to touch base with Mike, see how he's doing over there.
Yeah.
How can we? He has no internet.
I think he has a phone still.
I gotta break out the old prank phone. To talk right. To Mike.
Send him a telegram.
Yeah.
I'll try to hook my
all right, guys.
They give it a dial up.
Yeah, right.
Good job, everybody. Thank you for coming and talking about this. Thank you guys for listening. And that's it. Peace.
Peace.
Bitches.